and LaToysha Brown, all of them will be honored that night.
Zain El-Amin and Esther Iverum will share poetry.
It'll be an evening of community, music, poetry, and dancing with the WPFW family.
Tony Carr, Bill Wax, Kamal Harris, Craig Williams, Roach and Martine Brown, Tim Masters,
Violetta Diamond, Joni Eisenberg, Kim Bay, Verna Avery Brown, Ida Campbell, just to name a few of the programmers who will be hosting tables.
Details at WPFWFM.org.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th, 7 to 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt. Entertainment includes Navasha Deya and more. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.
At 89.3 FM, this is member supported WPFW Washington.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. I want to thank my main man, Kalia. He's in the house. Kalia is the brains behind this operation. When you call in at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. When you call in, he's going to be the person that you're talking to. Make sure when you call in, because we do a lot of open mic here, make sure that when you call in, open phones, open mic, whatever you want to call it. But make sure that when you call in, you do two things. Number one, don't set the phone down and wait to hear from me. We have a 10-second delay, and I end up inevitably every week saying, caller, are you there? Caller, 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 and they don't hear me. So try not to do that. Keep your phone close to your mouth close to the phone, and of course, turn off your radio or computer, whatever you're listening to in the background, and make sure we don't have any echo. So we love for people to be a part of the show at 202-588-0893. And as I always say, I prefer and I really enjoy people calling who disagree with me. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about that. And he's like, what is it about that? And I said, you know, that's kind of the point. You know, when people say, okay, because we get callers inevitably to say this. What's the answer, Garland? Oh, everything's screwed up. You know, the economy's shot. War all over the place. God only knows what. Internal squabbling throughout the U.S. People hate each other. People, their future, you know, they don't see a good future. You know, what is it you're trying to get at? And I say, you know, let me put it to you like this. If you want a peaceful world, you know, the only thing you can do to bring us a peaceful world, there's really only one thing you can actually do as a human being. You can talk to other people. You can't convince nobody of nothing. There's one way, one thing that every human being can do to bring us a more peaceful world. They can be peaceful. You want a kinder world. We need a kinder and gentler world. What can we do? You can be kind. And you can be gentle. That's the only thing you really have control over is yourself. When I said the U.S. is our government, yes, we got to do this and that, for this country's got to do what we say, and we're going to bring, I don't know, peace and stability. The truth of the matter is the only thing the United States as a country could possibly do to bring peace and stability is to be peaceful and stable. And that's something that you don't get from this empire, right? So when people say, you know, to call and say, what is the answer? You know, I guess it's an old philosophical discussion. But, you know, anytime you look outside of yourself for an answer, you're looking in the wrong place. How can we fix things? Number one, you can do things differently. You know, if you're asking me for an answer, what can you do differently? How could you live differently? How could you be differently? How could you think differently? What could you learn? What alternatives could you look into? If you're watching the same old news shows or looking at the same old websites, look at some different ones. You know, I think that it is one of the things that I enjoy here. It's talking to people that don't agree with me. Good old Max. Max calls in every week. Max is a part of the show. When Max first started calling, I think Max saw me as an adversary. I really do. And he would get freaked out. And I understand that. I understand that because that's the society we live in. That's the political environment that we live in, an environment of adversaries, of enemies. Oh, my gosh, it's the Trump supporters. They're terrible. Oh, no, it's the liberals. Oh, there or the whoever. Right. And I put it like this. Let me say this. I used to be on mainstream media. People know that. I used to be on Fox all the time, right? And I back then, when I was on Fox, I was a Democrat and I was a Democratic strategist. Coming up next, Carla Nixon, Democratic strategist. And over here, we've got Joe Ho Schmittenfield, whatever, Republican strategist. And they would set up a dynamic where I spoke for the Democrats and somebody else spoke for the Republicans. And then the dynamic was set and we were at each other's throats and we were at odds. And I thought that was normal and okay. Yeah, okay, well, I'll show that Republican. Then I'd argue and then I'd come back to my friends. Yeah, did you see what I said on Fox the other day? Oh, that was great. You showed that Republican, blah, blah, blah. But what I realized is this, that's what the ruling elite was very comfortable with. That's the dynamic that they set up, a dynamic where the American people box each other's ears, where we pick sides and fight it out. And they just sit back and they laugh all the way to the bank. What do they do on the international scale? They give you somebody to hate so you can sit down and fight it out. As they say about a war, you know what a bayonet is? A bayonet is a weapon with a working class person on either side of it, right? It's always the same game. Set the working class people up to fight amongst each other, to divide us into groups. You know, I have people that call in. You know what we need, Garland? We need a black party. We need a party for all black people. And what do I say? We need a party for all working class people. What would the ruling elites find with an all black party or all white party, or all Puerto Rican party? Hey, why don't we get an all party of Chinese? How about a gay people? They're very, very happy dividing the working class up, atomizing us, dividing us into groups. Let me tell you something. You ever been around really rich people? I have. And guess what? They ain't all that divided. They're not divided among race and creed and color and all. You know what they're divided? The wealthy, rich class. They're divided by class. So the bottom line is this. My belief, if you're asking me for answers, what do I think? They divide up by class. We got to come together by class. The working class people got to come together and say, you know what? We're being had, lied to, took. We're the ones that are suffering. And all we get is performative stuff. That's what we get, performative stuff. Look, I get people that call in and say, well, Garland, you stand for the Republicans. And I literally say, I am independent and I'm opposed to both parties. They're just a bunch. And I literally say, they're just a couple of warmongering cults, brainwashed warmongering cults, right? And I still get people that seem to think that I take one party over the other. And I think it's because they're put into a binary mindset. I'm going to go to the phones in a second, into a binary mindset. And if they hear somebody criticize the Democrats, they assume, well, you got to be a Republican. If they hear somebody criticizing the Republicans, they assume you must be a Democrat. There's no context given to us. And I know I was on TV. I was one of the people unknowingly creating that context. I didn't know it. When they stuck me on air, that was a setup for you, not for me. I was part of it. I'm arguing against the Republican, arguing against the Democrat. I didn't realize they want us battling it out, and they're always going to win. And you know what it ends up doing? You know what it ends up? The Democrat and the Republican, and they're both two working class fools arguing against each other. And it's always something ridiculous. We're going to argue over January 6th. January 6th is over. Ain't doing us no good. It ain't going to do nothing. We're going to argue over, I don't know, trans people. We're going to argue over something like that, right? What the two parties end up in, this is what it ultimately ends up arguing over. Is a zebra a black horse with white stripes or a white horse with black stripes? That's where we always end up making some similar argument, some inane, ridiculous argument that is not going to do anything to help the working class people. Any of us, black, white, green, gray, or grizzly, and they're going to be laughing while we pound each other over the head. 202-588-0893. First caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
What's going on, Garland? It's Max calling from Maryland. I appreciate the shout-out.
Max, I appreciate you calling. You know what? I think, Max, when you first called, I think you thought I was angry or I was your enemy. And I'm like, Max is one of my favorite callers. Max, that's my buddy. Max, what's happening?
No, I mean, I feel like we do agree on a lot of things. I think we do. I just think like we disagree on like certain things. I think maybe it's I think the Ukraine and the Russia stuff, and then maybe I'm just very like hyper fixated on Trump. I think for good reason, but I think that might be where the line in the sand kind of happens.
You know what? You know, Max, and I think that when I start talking about regular old people and working class people and, you know, look, we got to look out for the regular guy and, you know, they're getting screwed over by the powerful and the wealthy. I think really when it boils down to it, when I've heard you talk about different policies, whether it's Social Security, Medicaid, these types of things, minimum wage, I think one of the things that it comes down to help the person who's less fortunate or the working class person, I think we're probably almost all of that we agree on.
I think so too. Yeah, no, definitely. I yeah, certainly.
I think if you and I were both in Congress, we'd probably be voting side by side a lot. We may argue over something silly, but if it was like, all right, the people on Social Security, a 10% raise for the people on Social Security, we'd be like, yeah, I'm for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, the minimum wage is too low. We'd be like, I'm for that. Oh, well, we need, you know, whatever. I'm for that. You know, I think so. And I think that's what's important. I think I'm going to tell you why I think you're an important caller, because when you first started calling, we were arguing and fussing and this and that, but we kept at it. And the more we just talked, the more we realized how much we had in common and kind of became friends. And I think that's a model for people to look at and realize, hey, you know what? Maybe I got people out there that I think are my enemy that aren't really my enemy. What do you think? Oh, I think you might have your radio on in the background there, Max.
First started, hello?
Yeah, I think you got your radio on in the background.
But we kept at it. And the more we just talked,
yeah, definitely got your radio on in the background there, Max.
It kind of became
all right, Max. Well, look, we'll talk next week. Certainly appreciate it. Sounds like we got some technical difficulties with Max, our dear friend Max. But Max called. Again, you know what? Let me say this before I go to the next caller. There's an old saying. What you are is so screaming so loud, I can't hear what you're saying, right? You can always convince people of things in life by your actions, by the way you live, by the way you do things. My dad used to have a saying, children don't listen, they watch and learn. And I found that for everybody. So I think one of the important things that for me in this is to, if somebody calls and attacks me, Garland, you're a terrible host and you should never be on the air. My answer to them is, well, I'm glad you had the opportunity to say that, and I want you to call me back next week. I think that's what we have to do. We got to start setting an example for people that we're not just some partisan hack standing around waiting for a Republican to argue with so we can prove them wrong and get nothing out of it. And that so-called Republican or person that we prove wrong is getting shafted over by the ruling elite just like we are. All right, next call. You're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah,
next caller, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hello?
You are on the, you can't hear? I don't know if you can hear me. Maybe our caller can hear us.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Yasoni from Maryland, and I'm also, used to be a Democrat 100%, and now I'm an independent. I learned very quickly none of them are for us. They're all for each other. But I do have just one comment.
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago, you said that the word Democrat literally makes you sick to your stomach. Maybe you'll change a couple people's minds on thinking you are pro-Republican if they could hear the same thing about the Republicans coming out of your mouth.
Let me ask you this. See, that's the question I have. If I say the word Democrat makes me sick to the stomach. And I was furious at the time. It was an emotional, angry fury over the genocide, right? I was so mad, you know, over seeing these pictures of children with their heads blown off and people in tents burnt alive. It was anger and fury coming out of me saying, it makes me sick. That was anger, emotion, and fury, right? But here's my thing. If I say to you, you know what? I really hate vanilla ice cream. Does that imply that I like chocolate? See, I don't understand if I say I really don't like the libertarian ideology. Well, that doesn't imply that I like socialism or don't like socialism. I really hate socialism. That doesn't imply that I like libertarians. So here's my question to you. If I really say I hate one of the many parties, how does that imply that I like some other party that's totally unrelated?
I personally don't think that it does, but I think a lot of people do think that way.
And why do you think people think that way?
Good question. Because they're not open-minded?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's what I said. People, I had a caller a couple weeks ago, and he said, well, Garland, you only got two choices. You got to vote Democrat or Republican. I said, oh, no, I don't. There's all kind of parties out there.
Nope.
You got the Libertarian Party. You got the American Communist Party. You got the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You got a party in Maryland literally called the Independent Party. I said, there's all of these parties. I could write in, which I have in the past, the ghost of Abraham Lincoln if I want to write in. It's a mentality that says you only have two parties. That's a thought in someone's head. That is a concept. When I walk into the voting booth, that is not reality. Go ahead.
I agree 100%. I do have one more comment about Israel. This is nothing new. Nothing new with Israel. Israel has owned America. I had a very good friend in the 90s that was murdered by an American citizen, but used his father's Israeli citizenship to hide in Israel. They refused to extradite. And it was literally disgusting, and it's still going on now.
Yeah, a lot of that happens. All right. Thank you very much. Certainly appreciate the call. Let me just make a comment on that. People who say it's because I have a disagreement with the caller, but I understand a lot of people feel like that. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm wrong. Here's what I have to say. Remember, the number is 202-588-0893. When people say America's controlled by Israel, here's the way I look at it. Is my body controlled by my arm? My arm exists. Why? Because it gets blood and nutrients from my body. I could cut my arm off and still have my body, but I can't cut my body off and still have my arm. My arm is radial. It sticks out from my body. The blood comes from my heart and my body and goes into my arm. Everything, the nutrients, keeps my arm. My arm is kept alive because of my body. That's the way I view Israel. I don't view Israel as controlling the United States. I view it as a radial structure. It sticks out from the United States. Israel can't exist. They have no military without the United States. Right now, they got no bombs. They got no bullets. Their economy is collapsed. They have no money. Right now, when the people in the UN go to condemn Israel, the United States goes there and blocks them. When South Africa tries to go after Israel, the United States, oh, we're going to do this or that to South Africa, right? Israel... really, politically, militarily, and economically, does not exist without the United States. It is nothing but a radial structure. It sticks out from the United States. My arm does not control my body. Let me give you an example before I go to callers. So I remember this well. I'm watching this, you know, the whole Gaza thing, and Israel bombed some hospital, did some ungodly, brutal, vicious act that they do day to day, slaughtered a bunch of innocent civilians. And the bottom line was, so people were like around the world were outraged. Oh my gosh, they blew up a hospital, and people were outraged. And the U.S. was like, yeah, that was terrible. No, they hit a UN site or something, and everybody's like, that's terrible. And the U.S. government, the Biden administration, like, yeah, that's kind of terrible. And the Israelis went, whoa, 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 whoa. They said, Tony Blinken sat in on the meeting and approved the targeting for that site. And guess what? The Biden administration was like, oh, la, 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 nothing else to say here. Why? Because the Israelis were like this. Well, if you're going to get on us about doing our dirt, first you got to admit that you approved the targeting. Here's my belief. The Israelis can't do nothing without us. First of all, they don't have bombs without us. They don't have bombs. If you're going to kill somebody and you have no weapon, here's a gun, and then you shoot them. You can't shoot them without me giving you the gun. So the idea that the U.S. controls Israel, the U.S. Here's my opinion. Israel is a military and intelligence outpost that the United States uses. In fact, I would argue that Israel is being destroyed because the United States is using it as a proxy to go after the oil-rich region. That's all it is. It is a proxy force to go after the oil-rich region, and it is being destroyed as a proxy force. Just like Ukraine is a proxy army, and that proxy army is being sacrificed and destroyed. The same, is Israel better off? And since because of their relationship, how's Israel doing right now? Their economy's collapsed. It's a worldwide pariah. They're being bombed, blown up. They're in war all the time. Are they really better off? We keep Benjamin Netanyahu the most unpopular internally. He's the most unpopular prime minister Israel's ever had. And the only reason he stays in power is because the United States keeps him in power. We are not Israel's friend. They are falling to pieces because the United States uses Israel as a proxy. That's all it is. It's just a proxy force, intelligent military. Okay, 202-588-0893. One other thing I'll say is the United States benefits because they can do their dirt and stick Israel out there. And the United States will say, and the world will say, look what Israel did instead of look what the United States did. That's like me punching you and then saying, oh, my fist punched you. I don't know why my fist punched you, my stupid old fist. I wish it hadn't punched you. It's my fist. That fist is an extension of my arm. That fist comes out from my body. Israel is a fist, a cat's paw. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, yo, Brother Mike from D.C., man.
Talk to me, Brother Mike.
Well, first of all, now you're not going to disagree with when you talk about that. This is what you said, the rich versus the poor. That's what you said?
Yes, that's what I said, brother. But good. We're going to disagree. You call it on in and tell me. Yeah. Call me out, Brother Mike. Call me out.
Now, you're right about it is the rich versus the poor. But when it comes to us, a lot of blacks right now do believe that it is time for a black political party. I have never seen that hunger this strong before. And it is a deep hunger about that right now because people are tired of doing things the same way that we always do. We always teaming up with other people in other ethnic groups, and we still come out on a losing end of the stick. You got the brothers, you got the black, a lot of people in the black community, they're tired of that right now. They want to try something different. They want to try something new right now. And I don't think that that's going to slow down anytime soon because of what people see that's going on out there right now. So, you know, and I know that you probably don't agree with that. Now, that's the one thing you and I are going to disagree with.
No, but we're in the same ballpark. We may not be, exactly both, you know, swinging at the same pitch, but we're in the same ballpark. We realize we're being had. Both of us say the same thing. My position, Biden came in 2020. And what did he say on the campaign trail? Oh, I'm going to get a free college. We're going to raise the minimum wage. And oh, we're going to give you a public option. He did none of it. Every single word out of his mouth was a stinking lie. Trump comes up. I'm going to be the peace candidate, and I'm going to bring peace, and I'm going to lower grocery prices. Every word of it was a lie. People are exhausted. Now people want to believe their party's better, the other party's better, but the last two presidents we had, really all of them, but I'm just going to say the last two presidents that we had, every single word out of their mouth on the campaign trail was a filthy lie. And the second both of them got in, they went in a complete opposite direction than they told everybody.
Well, first of all, you got to understand, both of these parties are the same. They're no different. Yep. And people are some people that are smart enough to realize that, and some people are not. You can talk till you're blue in the face. You're going to have people call on the show. They're going to attack you if you're not a Democrat. And for some reason, I still cannot understand. But you got people waking up with the Democratic Party. But you still got a lot of people that still view that the Democratic Party is the savior of the American people. But again, you got people that are waking up right now. I said up front that I am for a black political party or for a third party. But the only way that the third party is going to work, you're going to have people that come together that's not too far to the left or too far to the right and have a middle ground that people can agree on. that's and it's a golden opportunity for a third party right now also, you know, like I said, with the Black political party. But one thing I want to ask you, what is going on with BRICS? Is that important anymore or because of Trump's
well, yeah, BRICS is very important. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Iran's a member, Algeria's a member. There's it is an alternative economic bloc. It's a very powerful alternative economic bloc, and it's growing. The countries in it economically are growing, and more countries are moving away from the United States. Let me just say this real quick, and I'll let you say something. What happened after 1945? The United States created an economic infrastructure around the whole world so that the U.S. could dominate the economics around the world. But what did the U.S. do? It started sanctioning people. It started using its dominant economic power for punitive need. I'm going to hurt you. You can't spend this. You can't do this. We're going to destroy your country, whatever. BRICS is a reaction to that, where other countries started saying, you know what? Y'all are not fair, United States. You're dominating everybody and you're sanctioning everybody. We need an alternative economic structure. That's what BRICS is about. And it's growing, and BRICS is the future.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're reporting that, because I was wondering, because I haven't heard anything about BRICS for a while. And like, okay, because Trump got in office and he threatened tariffs on everybody, has BRICS, they scared the BRICS thing away? I was wondering about that.
Think about this. Like I said, countries that are growing faster economically than anyone else. Let me give you two countries. Russia and China are two of the fastest growing countries. And that's the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, right? So those are the two. I would say Russia and China are the economic leaders of BRICS right now. But there's a lot of other countries. The last time I checked, there were 40 countries who had applied to become a member of BRICS. People are looking at the U.S. empire and saying, look, if you have an economic system where the money is made off of asset-backed securities and derivatives, you're not making anything anymore. You don't have a real economy. You don't have an industrial base. They're going in other directions. And that's what's happening with us. Go ahead.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned about that, because I knew that you'd probably be the person to ask about that. But when you listen to conservative radio, that every time when they had guests, they never allowed a listening audience to talk to their guests. Because I really wanted to see what they had to say about closing down all the federal, you know, all these federal jobs just so they can get private jobs. And I keep saying, when you take a person's livelihood away from them, they're going to fight back. You know, so what is your prediction on the midterm elections?
I have no idea at this point. You know, what's interesting, I'm glad you brought that up. What is interesting is that I saw a poll the other day, 69% of Americans don't approve of the Democrats. 27% approval rating is what the Democrats, 27 to 29% approval rating. What usually happens as Trump, you would think that as Trump's approval rating went down, that the Democrats' approval rating would go up, but it ain't. They're both going down. I think people are sick and tired. The Democrats, I don't know what's going to happen.
Now, see, you
better in the middle. I don't know, but their approval rating is not good. I personally believe that, I'll be honest, I think a big part of it is Gaza. I think there are a lot of people that were supporters of the Democratic Party that see the Democratic Party as morally discredited, and they ain't coming back. Maybe I'm wrong. You get the last word, Mike. I got more callers. Go ahead.
You just proved my point. You just proved my point, what I was saying. The opportunity for a Black and a third political party is the best time right now to come up with that, because it will work right now. Because people do not like neither one of these parties or trust neither one of these parties. And all these politicians, they're out to make money for themselves. Now, the one thing that they say Elon Musk is going to do, which I do hope he does, I do want to figure out how are these elected officials are becoming multimillionaires that serve in public office. I didn't really get all that money.
Well, and, I'll put it to you like this. I don't have no trust for Elon Musk that he's going to do. You know, the idea to me that the richest man person that we're told is one of the richest people in the world is going to do anything to help the little guy. Yeah,
I agree with you on that
quite
one.
Very dubious.
I agree with
that,
you on that one.
Friend.
But I still was wondering if he does report on how these elected officials that go into Congress becoming a multimillionaire and still don't want to help nobody else. I think that's good to know that. But as far as
Mike, if we're really honest about it, we don't need Elon Musk to tell us. We know how they get rich. We know why they're getting rich. We know what time it is with these people. You know what I'm saying? They have to all kind of chicanery. How do you make $170,000 a year and turn that into $20 million in a couple years? You know what I'm saying? We know what time it is. Thanks a lot, Mike. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where you're calling from?
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, or whatever.
Hello. Hey, what's happening? What's happening, my brother? How goes all down in Fort Washington?
Me?
Make sure you got your radio turned off in the back, because that'll mess us up. It'll, you know, you'll hear the words twice.
Okay, if it's me, not in Fort Washington.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, go ahead. You're in. All right. I don't know why I thought you was in Fort Washington, but go ahead. What's happening?
Well, Chris, Cori Bush set a new record for speaking, and I don't see the meaning of it too much. I also noticed he didn't say too much about the genocide or anything going on with regards to my tax dollars supporting this genocide. So I'm sort of disappointed by that.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, though. It wasn't a filibuster. He was not like, okay, I'm going to filibuster and stop something. He just like was out there running his mouth for 25 hours. He just like set a record or whatever. But he wasn't like filibustering, trying to stop elections. It really was just performative. Now, might I add, the reason you didn't hear him say anything about what's going on in Gaza is because he is one of the biggest Israeli supporters you'll ever not, you know, one of the biggest supporters of genocide that you'll find. He is a... If you want to talk about somebody in the back pocket of AIPAC, it's him. So, again, the point I've made is that Cori Bush, the Democrats, they're so compromised when it comes to, you know, this whole Israel issue. They're so compromised when it comes to the violence and the genocide going on in Gaza that they have no moral ground on which to stand. And when Cori Bush stands up, I mean, Cori, whatever his name is, stands up and runs his mouth, I just look around and say, I could throw up. What are you talking about? Well, who are you standing up against? What are you standing up for? If you don't stand against genocide, you stand for nothing. That's my position. Go ahead.
I think he and the rest of our politicians, and this is where you might be a little bit wrong. Remember the Star Trek series? They had a villain called the Borg, and the Borg came up and they told everybody, you will be assimilated. You will be assimilated. And I think maybe that's the thing here with AIPAC. When they weren't made to be foreign agents, they have the billionaire class, part of the billionaire classes with them, and they're talking to all our politicians and politicians in other European countries also. And the thing is, they're being assimilated, and they're controlling the, I'm sorry if it sounds racist, but I do believe that the media in a lot of the world is controlled by the same group of pro-Israeli people, and it's especially true in the United States, and I think that's why we're in danger of being their puppets. If you remember Martin Luther King, he was a true American hero and leader. Because he could get 1 million black people on the streets in any city. But guess what? He could get 1 million white people on the streets in any city. So when people talk about we need our own black party, whatever, we would still, if we did not have some sort of friendship and solidarity with a group of white people who shared the values of liberty and justice and some of these other things, we would still be picking cotton and getting... non-educated and not learning about black history and not being able to vote or go to restaurants or parks or anything else. So I hope that we learn our lesson and start uniting with everybody. If not, the billionaires who are laughing all the way around the bank, because they're not patriotic. They don't care what country they live in. As long as they can get us fighting against each other, they're the ones, they're the reasons immigrants come here, because they messed up the immigrants' countries by making people work for very little wages. And they messed up our countries by sending the jobs out to those other countries. So I hope we start to see things a little bit more clearly and realize that we have to get along through compromise with other people who we have something in common with.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'll say this. You mentioned that earlier. You said, well, you know, I don't want to sound racist. Well, what, here's the issue. The issue of Zionism is an ideology. Joe Biden is an avowed Zionist, isn't he? He's an avowed Zionist. Joe Biden's Catholic, an avowed Zionist, right? Yeah. Donald Trump is an avowed Zionist. Neither one of those people are Jewish. They're Zionists. You don't have to be right. Jewish to be Zionist. Joe Biden, I am a proud Zionist, right? So it's not, if you say, I oppose Zionism, well, you could, I'll put it like this, you could be a Jewish rabbi and say, I don't like Joe Biden, I don't like your position on Israel. Donald Trump, I don't like your position on Israel. Are you going to say the Jewish rabbi who opposes Trump and Biden, neither one of them Jewish, are an anti-Semite? No. And that's one of the reasons I think that there's such a push to redefine opposition to Israel, which is just another country that has government policies, to redefine opposition to a particular government or a particular ideology, which is Zionism, which in the United States is loaded with Christian Zionists, right? They redefine that so that when someone says, well, I don't like Zionism, redefine that, oh, that's anti-Semitism. Well, they can't possibly logically be so as long as Joe Biden and Donald Trump can be a Zionist. Then I can oppose Zionism, and it has nothing to do with opposing Judaism. It's a conflagration of the two things. I don't know how many Jewish people I know, Jewish Voices for Peace, not in my name. These are Jewish organizations that say, I oppose the policies of the Israeli government. They're Jewish people. Are the Jewish people, they're Zionists because they're opposing a white guy over his policies. So that's why I say it's a false argument to conflate the discussion of government policy with a particular rigid religion in this particular instance.
Well, that I hear, but I also would argue that the chosen few might be wrecking the United States. Look at our stock market and look at the statements of African and Asian leaders who say they will in the future not do business with the our racist country anymore, but we'll see.
The U.S. is the U.S. empire is unraveling. The U.S. empire is unraveling, and as the empire unravels, everything it does to try to save itself only makes it unravel faster. As the U.S. empire declines, what you'll find is this: when an empire is in decline, everything that empire does to try to stop itself from declining only makes it decline faster. All right, thanks a lot. Certainly appreciate the call. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you're calling from?
Garth, Max. I'm back. My radio's off.
All right, Max. Now we're getting somewhere. What's happening?
So what is your opinion on historic Dow decreases the last couple of days? What's your take?
Look, bottom line is this: the economy is coming unglued. The whole Trump tariff thing, it's absurd, it's preposterous. But he's not an economist. This is an ideology. Just like Musk saying, we've got to fire all of these government employees and things will be better. That's ideological. They're not evaluating things. They believe these things are true because they believe they're true. And as I just said, the United States as an empire with 900 bases, we are an empire. The empire is declining. And everything the Republicans or the Democrats do to try to stop the empire from declining, everything they do only makes it decline faster. And this is just making the empire, this foolishness with the tariffs, it's only making the empire decline even faster. It's destabilizing us.
Yeah, no, and the crazy thing is that he's lying about, like, the percentages that other countries tariff us at. Like both China only tariffs us at 21%, and he said that it was like 67%, and then Taiwan or Vietnam, he claimed they're tariffing us at like 91%. It's only 9%, and they don't realize, like, those countries kind of have a reason to do tariffs because they're relying more on their development, their industries, whereas us being a mega financial service economy,
we kind of rely, that's why we stopped doing certain types of manufacturing so that we could have cheap imports. So it's kind of like, it's not even like there's a reason why they do tariffs, whereas us doing tariffs is just, it doesn't benefit us. It doesn't do anything.
First, here's the thing too. None of it makes any sense for this reason. Okay. It's supposed to bring, we're going to bring industry back. Coming back. Why did industry leave? Industry left because they could get cheap labor elsewhere and they could make greater profits now. And let me add this. This is something that isn't discussed in this whole tariff thing. A lot of the countries, take Apple, for instance, take Nike, for instance, right? These are American companies. They have the stuff made in another country because they can make it cheaper and get a bigger profit and then bring it back here. So the tariffs you're putting are actually on a lot of American companies, which is going to hurt some American companies. None of it makes sense. The economy has changed, and you're just not going to snap your fingers and come up with some policy that's going to force these companies to come back and build stuff here. And not, we don't even have the infrastructure. You start building factories here with our shoddy roads and terrible electrical infrastructure, we'll have blackout. You start putting a bunch of factories up with our old infrastructure, electrical infrastructure, which they won't rebuild, our energy infrastructure. You start putting up a bunch of factories that have a big draw on the electrical grid, and you watch what happens. Heck, if we get a hot day, we have brownout now because our energy infrastructure is so pathetic. You put in a bunch of factories and you tell me what's going to happen when they crank all them factories on and we try to turn our air conditioners off. The whole thing will shut down. We don't even have the infrastructure. The whole thing is a pie in the sky joke, and we're the punchline.
I agree with that too. And this is kind of the part where I think I'm interested in your pushback, because I think you might disagree with me on this one a little bit. You may and may not, but I think these tariffs, I think the government purges, I think even though the deportations haven't manifested yet, the policy kind of with the lack of due process is definitely pushing in. My interpretation of all of this, because it's because of what also happened in 2020 with the riots and the protests, I believe Trump wants to manufacture a recession with chaos and riots so that he can possibly invoke the Insurrection Act and really try to deploy either National Guard or even deploy military, because there are illegal statutes that would allow the deploying of military under the Insurrection Act.
I'll say this, Max. I think he really believes it'll work. I think
he really believes
that these tariffs are going to somehow just turn the economy around. I think he really believes it. It ain't going to happen, but I think he really believes it. But we will see. But it doesn't matter what he believes. It doesn't matter what we believe. The effects are coming, and they've already started. So, you know, it is what it is. He can believe what he wants to. We can, but the effects are coming. And what's going to happen is more and more countries are just simply going to say, you know what, it's too much trouble to deal with the United States. Let's just do business amongst ourselves. That's the big thing that's going to happen. All right. Thanks a lot, Max. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, you're on the air. Oh, no. I think, wonder if we lost our latest caller. Yeah, we lost him. All right. We got any more callers? We got another one? All right. Next caller. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello. Is that me?
What's that? I didn't hear that.
Is that me? Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, first, I want to thank you for helping me to Middle Nation.
Thank you very much.
And I'm not going to get into the things about what's going on specifically, like tariffs and all that. I think that's just semantics. But with regard, you already actually gave me a segue, because you said the empire is collapsing, and I believe you. And so what I did today was I questioned the internet as to the average age of an empire. And guess what the average age of an empire is?
What's that?
250 years. 250 years.
How about that?
Guess what? guess what? 2025 minus 1776 is 249. So all the things are pointing to what you're talking about. So we can dance around the semantics of it. And I think this is a bigger appointing of the fact that human beings, no matter religious, politics, it doesn't matter, we're not very good stewards of the planet that we've been given for how many ever years that a human being is on this planet. I don't think we're very good stewards of it. So I think this eventually is all going to crash and burn.
Yeah, I see it right here. It says studies show that an empire survives on average of near 250 years. Well, you know what's interesting about America, though? The Roman Empire, the Ottoman Empire, on and on, right? These were like out and out saying we're an empire. The United States, there's a book called How to Hide an Empire. Americans don't even know that they live in an empire. They think it's just a country. Americans are like, yeah, we got 900 bases around the world, but we're not an empire. We're not imperial at all. What do they think they're not? Well, gee, if you ask Americans, how many governments have we overthrown since, what about 70? Overthrown government after government, right? I can start naming government. Pretty much every government in South America and Central America, most of the governments in Africa we've overthrown. Iran, I could go country after country where the United States have overthrown governments illegally, assassinated the leaders, stolen their stuff. But if you say to the, anybody, America right now, if you say, the U.S. overthrew the government of Ukraine in 2014. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. And I'll be like, so they overthrew every other government around, but they didn't overthrow that one. Americans will never believe the crime that their government created that's right in front of their face. Americans, it takes them about 5 to 10 years after America commits the crime to say, perhaps there wasn't weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But when the government tells them it, they believe it. Right now, half of America, if you say the United States overthrew the government of Ukraine in 2014, they'll say, oh, no, they didn't. That's a lie. 5 years from now, you know what? It will be common knowledge. Americans will not admit that they live on a pirate ship. Americans think they live on a luxury liner. Go ahead.
You're right. They live on a pirate ship. But they don't believe anything. It's so many distractions, so many things you can occupy your brain power with. And studying reality seems to be boring to these people because they don't read, and they don't read much of anything, much less history. So
I think it's emotional too. Americans, if you actually study reality and you understand what America has done, it'll turn your stomach. 2-3 million in Vietnam. If you look at it, in Vietnam, I got a book right sitting beside me called The Phoenix Program, where Americans were in Vietnam, kidnapping, rape, murder, assassination. The CIA did everything. There's books about the CIA running cocaine from Central America with the Contras, running heroin from the Golden Triangle down during Vietnam. They're running child murder rape cases with the U.S. Child rape with the U.S. Intelligence operations. But if you say to the U.S. to Americans, we're doing something wrong in country X, they'll say, no, we're not. I don't believe it. Americans will not believe the truth, no matter how much evidence is in front of them. I think Americans don't want to admit it. Go ahead.
I have a book in front of me called Without Sanctuary. It's a pictorial of all the lynchings that went on in America and all the people, how they celebrated it and sent postcards back and forth to the family members and cut off human parts as souvenirs. So aren't these the same descendants of those people? So I'm not sure why they're talking these semantics when we're Well, I really appreciate always talking to you.
Thank you. I certainly appreciate it. Well, let me just thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yes. To me, politics in the United States is like wrestling. Look. Professional wrestling. And people watch professional wrestling and they see Hulk Hogan, and he's the good guy, and he's going against the Iron Sheik or whoever's the bad guy, right? Americans, when you watch it, there's not really a good guy and there's not really a bad guy, and a good guy's not going in, and they're all, all of that stuff. But when you watch professional wrestling, you get the same good feeling. You get the same emotional charge as though Hulk Hogan really was the good guy and the Iron Sheik really was the bad guy. Even though you know they ain't a good guy or the bad guy deep in your heart, but you get that same feeling. That's Americans. The only thing Americans want is that feeling that you get, that dopamine rush that comes from believing that whoever you like, whatever your politician, your party, whatever you come up with, that they're the good guys versus the bad guys, archetypes. That's how they drag us around. They use heroes. They use villains. Heroes and villains, heroes and villains. That's all we get. Next call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? You're on the air. Next caller.
JD from D.C.?
Talk to me, JD from DC.
Hey man, look here. Bravo on all your platforms. I listen to you. I'm a truck driver, man, former law enforcement, and I would like to say to the people, and to say to you, you are spot on a whole lot of stuff that you're talking about. Because guess what, man? You know, these people out here, man, when they voted for the ticket that they voted for, they voted Caucasian. They didn't vote for a platform. They voted for what they thought that was going to be. And then when it happened to them, it happened to them, you know. And now we got a situation right now, you know, that a lot of people are complaining and talking about different types of things going on. But you already know this platform was going to be going on. And it went on, and it's happening right now. And I got a wife and I got a daughter that work in the federal government. And guess what, you know, they're afraid, they're a little scared and everything else, but by the same token, I think we're gonna kind of be good on a lot of our situations. But also, too, the thing that I want to tell people is this. Look, when we start thinking about a third party and working on a third party platform and dealing with that on a basis and whatnot and coming together as a folk and as a people, it's going to work out for them. You know, what your thoughts?
Thank you very much. Certainly appreciate the call. You know, well, you know, same here. I have family members. I have family members that retired from the federal government, family members, friends that work for the federal government. It's very painful for me. It's painful for everybody in this region. Now, I understand there's nothing I can do about it, but it's very painful. I'm worried about some of my family members and friends and loved ones who work. It's terrible. I see what happened after 2008. They went to the private sector and they cleaned it out. All these people that had good jobs in the private sector, what did they do? They cleaned out all the jobs that were in industrial America. That's when they closed all their factories down. 2008, all these office jobs and private sector jobs, they laid the people off there and they had to come back and get a job working at the mini market. And now they're going for the public sector. They're bit by bit, they're wiping out all the good jobs as they imagine the saying, yes, I'm going to bring industry back. Really, for what? The jobs? Oh, and what are you doing meanwhile, right? You're going to lay off a bunch of working class people who have a decent job. Why, what are you doing? We need to bring more jobs. It's all a lie. Might I add, if Elon Musk was concerned about jobs, maybe he'd let go $5 to $10 billion worth of defense contracts. No, he ain't doing that because it ain't about that. It's ideology. And it's the ruling elite don't give a crap about us. We are nothing. I've been saying it for years. We're nothing but fuel for their machines. They lie to us. They cheat us, they use us up, and they try to keep us fighting amongst each other. And as long as we're fighting amongst each other or believing their lies, we're losing. And I'm hoping at some point that by setting the example on this show, right, of saying, look, you know what, call in. I don't care if you agree with me. I don't care if you hate my guts. But call in and let's have a conversation amongst people that are like-minded. And I don't mean ideologically always like-minded. I mean, I pray for somebody who says I'm a diehard Trump supporter. Call in. I'm not going to disrespect you. One of my best fishing buddies is a diehard Trump supporter. I laugh about it. He'll wear his red hat out fishing. I say, oh, man, look, you and your red hat, you know, whatever. I laugh about it. But he's a good guy and I like him. And what I'm trying to get people to understand is, I'll end up with this. I've told the story once. I'll tell it a million times because it's very, very important. When I was in law enforcement, when I was very young, out of the academy, back then, at one point, I was sent to work with a person who I was going to be under. And they said, look, Garland, a bunch of people told me he's racist. He's a racist guy. He's a racist. You're going to have a time working for him. And at the time, I was just like, yeah, whatever. Let me see what happens, right? You know me. I went and worked with the guy. We became the best of friends. And guess what else? Another black dude that worked with us became his best friend, on and off the work. And it came to me at some point, I just realized he'd never really been around black folks that much. And I guess he thought black people were some weird, different kind of creature, right? And once he got around and he realized, you know, the guy, you know, they liked the same things. They were fans of the same sports teams and all, and they became best of friends. His only weakness that made him so-called such a racist was he never really been around black folks. And when he got an opportunity to be around some black folks, and he made friends, he was like, okay. We never had that discussion, but it was obvious to me, right? So don't be so quick to judge and hate a person, even if they're a racist, even if they're the racist, sexist, homophobe. Let me tell you something. I played basketball, true story, before I go. In Anne Arundel Community College, I played basketball. And when I was there, you know what we used to say? I was 19 years old. This is how you would insult somebody. Ha, ha, ha. You're a gay rights activist. Ha, ha. It was an insult back then. Oh, you gay rights. I didn't know. I had no idea. I didn't really know any gay. Well, come to find out, I knew a guy that was gay. But years later, I found out. I didn't even know he was gay at the time, sadly. But here's my point. Was I some terrible, evil, horrible person because I was like an anti-gay homophobe? I just didn't know. And as I had the opportunity to meet and figure if I was like, boy, I sure was stupid. I that wasn't right. So don't be so quick to dislike and hate and be angry. Sometimes, more often than not, it's out of ignorance. And you can be you can have the opportunity through your actions to demonstrate to people why they're wrong. You don't tell people. You can tell people, they won't listen to you. What you are, don't forget this. What you are screams so loud people can't hear what you say. Be the change, right? Be the person that demonstrates to people that maybe their assumptions are wrong. Though that's, I'm gonna leave you with that. I want to thank my main man, Kalia, for doing the job as always. And by the way, if you want to find me, I got a YouTube show. You can find my YouTube show. I'm always running my mouth there. You can just follow me on Telegram. Follow me, Garland Nixon, GARLANDNIXON. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram. Last but not least, you can email me. My first name and the first letter of my last name, garlandn@gmail.com. Thanks, my main man, Kalia, for doing such a fantastic job. I'm out.
It's time for the percolator. 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 Percolator.